This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. 50 years ago today, here in Washington, the United States Supreme Court stunned the country with a unanimous decision in Brown versus the Board of Education. The court declared for the first time that racial segregation in public schools was inherently unequal and unconstitutional. NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg takes a look at Brown's legacy.
On May 17, 1954, history professor John Hope Franklin was in his office at Howard University when his wife called with the news. Franklin, who'd been commuting to New York to help with the legal attack on segregation, could hardly believe his ears.
I was amazed that the decision was unanimous. I thought it was sort of a miracle.
John Lewis was in ninth grade in rural Alabama at an all-black school with no indoor plumbing, no gym, and about 80 black youngsters crammed into every class.
I was so happy, I was so thrilled, because I thought that following year that I would be attending an integrated school and the school would be a better school.
Walter Dellinger was 13, sitting in his all-white classroom in Raleigh, North Carolina, when the assistant principal came to tell his teacher the news.
The teacher said, "Children, the Supreme Court has spoken. Next year, you will go to school with colored children."
She was wrong. By the time the rural South was desegregated, Walter Dellinger would have graduated from high school, college, law school, and was himself teaching Brown to law students. And John Lewis had become a celebrated civil rights activist, a freedom writer whose bloodied and beaten face on the front pages of the nation's newspapers had struck at the core of the American conscience. 50 years ago today, Sidner Thompson, a young Southern lawyer who had helped argue the South's case for school segregation, got the word that he had lost. Eventually, Thompson would return to North Carolina and would work hard for a peaceful desegregation of the Charlotte school system. Today, he says quite simply,
"Thank God we lost the case."
Today, Thompson worries about the resegregation of the public schools in Charlotte and elsewhere because most of the court orders requiring desegregation have ended. Some of the civil rights lawyers who fought to implement the Brown ruling, however, now wonder if they were wrong. NYU law professor Derek Bell.
We might have been better off if the court had said the separate but equal standard has been only half enforced on a separate part. We are going to use that standard to enforce the equal part.
Bell is not the only one-time civil rights lawyer with regrets. Reuben Anderson, who in 1990 would become the first black Mississippi Supreme Court Chief Justice, was the first black law school graduate from the University of Mississippi. His first job was for the NAACP, seeking to make Brown a reality.
We put a tremendous emphasis on integration and probably education suffered some. Black leaderships in the school districts suffered tremendously because a lot of black principals were terminated, a lot of blacks were demoted, and I just think that probably we'll settle with that today.
Some scholars now postulate that school desegregation was inevitable, regardless of Brown. University of Virginia law professor Michael Klarman notes that after World War II, President Truman had desegregated the military, Jackie Robinson had desegregated baseball, and in the aftermath of Nazi rule in Europe, America had embraced a new racial ethic. The border states, he argues, would have desegregated eventually on their own, and Congress, in the very long run, would have forced desegregation on the Deep South.
Brown accelerated the process because I think Brown brought out the worst in white supremacy. It created a political environment that was ripe for violence. It gave politicians incentives to be extreme and to use incendiary rhetoric. And when that happened, and when the violent political atmosphere confronted civil rights demonstrators, it produced an explosion on national television.
More common is the view that the court's subsequent decision a year after Brown, ordering school desegregation with all deliberate speed, put the reins on the decision and made it possible for massive resistance to take hold. Harvard Law professor Charles Ogletree.
If you have the executive branch, the legislative branch, and ultimately the judicial branch not fully committed to integrated education, it was a flawed decision. And that is the legacy of Brown that we're dealing with 50 years later.
For many, though, Brown was a formative and transformative moment in American life. Historian Richard Kluger.
Whereas I think blacks were virtually invisible in mainstream American culture 50 years ago. Today, the black presence is everywhere in our society, and things that we sometimes don't even think about, the way we talk, the way we dress, the way we sing, the way we play, the way we shake hands even.
Bob Carter, a young lawyer for the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, argued one of the five school desegregation cases in the Supreme Court in 1954. Today, he's a federal judge.
I think that the legacy of Brown is that it transformed the society. The black middle class has just grown and grown and grown, opened the doors for it. Before Brown was decided, for example, I had the view that I knew every black graduate student in the country. After Brown, I don't know. I know just a few people.
John Lewis, the young Alabamian who never got a chance to attend integrated schools, would later become a congressman from Atlanta.
The decision itself led to the modern-day civil rights movement. It created a climate. It gave us hope that we could not only desegregate public education, but other aspects of American life.
2 years after the Brown decision, John Hope Franklin would leave predominantly black Howard University to become chairman of the Department of History, first at Brooklyn College, then at the University of Chicago, and finally, he joined the faculty at the once segregated University of North Carolina.
I think Brown did have the impact of shaking this country up and making it confront the question of race the way it, I think, had not done. And I think that if we hadn't had Brown, we might not have had the Civil Rights Act. We might not have had the Voting Rights Act. We certainly might not have had the slow but somewhat steady disintegration of segregation in the workplace.
And Walter Dellinger, that white boy in junior high in Raleigh, now a Duke law professor and appellate advocate, he sees Brown as a defining moral moment for the South and for himself.
Whereas segregation had merely been a fact about the universe as I was growing up, neither right nor wrong, but just something that was, that changed on May 17, 1954, when the court made it a moral proposition that segregation was immoral.
None of these people dispute the racial problems that remain in America today, from the resegregation of the public schools to the inequality of public education offered to so many poor minority children. Historian John Hope Franklin, at age 88, looks at it all through the sweep of history. Not long ago, he returned to Booker T. Washington High School, the segregated high school in Tulsa from which he graduated. He was being inducted into the school's Hall of Fame, and he was amazed.
I wouldn't have thought that the president of the student body would be white. That was beyond my conception. That when they entertained the inductees in the Hall of Fame, we would be entertained at in the home of a man who was in oil and his wife was in diamonds. They obviously were white. And there I was in the high school where I thought I was doomed to live and die, and all of my descendants would live and die in these segregated schools. But there it was, quite open and quite different.
Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.